Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, day three. Today we're talking about meltdowns associated with anxiety.
I've enjoyed these talks.
I have too.
Yeah, they've been good.
Because they're really important. And I think that today's, with today's, we start getting into a slightly different realm.
Right.
And the reason is that when we're talking about meltdowns associated with anxiety, now we're talking about things really fueled by emotionality, by a lot of inside stuff that's happening with
the
kid.
Right. Now, this is where we start to move into, we talked yesterday and the day before about the onset, mm-hmm. the intensity, and the duration.
Right.
Okay. Typically shorter
right.
with ADHD.
Right.
Okay. Now we're moving into those yeah. types of meltdowns that are much more intense,
mm-hmm.
that have much longer duration,
mm-hmm.
And could have a destructive or dangerous element
right.
to them.
Right.
We didn't see that on Monday on two previous podcasts.
Right.
Now we're moving in that direction.
Right.
And because of that, we generally tend to think of what we're going to be talking about now for the rest of the week that has a more biological, a neurobiological component to it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anxiety is a peculiar beast because it is, regardless of the type of anxiety, and there are dozens or more different particular types
right.
of anxiety,
mm-hmm.
regardless of all, you know, any particular diagnosis itself, all anxiety disorders result in very similar symptoms. You know, we characterize anxiety disorders, or we differentiate anxiety disorders, not by the symptoms, but by the trigger for those symptoms.
Right. Right? That's right.
Mm-hmm. So whether you have generalized anxiety disorder, or you have a specific phobia, or anything like that, we're talking about very specific things that happen that cause
right.
that trigger a very similar set of symptoms or characteristics.
That's right. The behavior itself looks the same, but the trigger mm-hmm. might be very different.
Right.
And so we identify based on the trigger,
right.
the fear or the phobia,
right.
Rather than the characteristics, because the characteristics look pretty much the same,
right.
regardless of the trigger.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the challenge with anxiety disorders, unlike ADHD or you know, when it's a parenting issue, what happens with anxiety is that many times, well, I guess before I say that, what I should say is that anxiety is a response in your brain prior to cognition. That was a very scientific way of saying you begin to get stressed out and respond to a stressful event before you even really process that you're in a stressful event. Did that one?
Okay.
Did you get it? So if you're in the woods, you're running before you actually realize that you're being chased by a bear. You are running because your brain, these particular regions of your brain, identify the threat before it gets to the cortex that actually, you know, interprets the stimulus. And it gets to that thalamus that then says, oh, I think that's a danger. And then it sends information to other, you know, more subcortical regions that says, we got to get out of here.
So you're reacting emotionally
right.
before you identify the source.
Right.
Okay. So for example, a panic attack.
Right.
Okay. You have a panic attack, and then after you have the panic attack, you begin to identify the source
right.
of the panic attack.
Right.
The only clarification is, let's say you have a fear of frogs.
Mm-hmm.
If you see a frog, it elicits the...
Right. Right. But what also happens, and this is where we get to what we're talking about here, is that there are times when you will see something that your brain interprets as a frog that isn't a frog, but makes you respond as though it was a frog.
Okay.
So let's say, instead of frogs, let's say snakes. If you're...
Mm-hmm.
afraid of snakes, you're in your backyard, you lift something up, you will jump back and feel that fight or flight, that fear mm-hmm. response, before you recognize that, oh, it's just the water hose.
Right.
Because your brain interprets it as a snake or makes you mm-hmm. respond to it as though it was a snake before your brain even realizes that it's not a snake.
Okay.
So your brain is responding to a lot of these anxieties and fears without you really being fully aware of what you're responding to.
Right. So it would be similar to if you hear a loud, what sounds like an explosion, your brain sends you in mm-hmm. a direction before you identify it as a car backfiring
right.
rather than a gunshot.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. And so, and that's where we get PTSD, because right. PTSD creates those sort of, mm-hmm. Those kinds of hardwired reactions to things that sound similar or elicit those kinds of responses.
That's right, because the emotional structures of the brain exist to keep us alive.
Right.
They're survival mechanisms.
Right.
Okay. And so they tend to work more quickly mm-hmm. than the cognitive
right.
parts of our brain.
Right.
So what you're saying is that these emotional structures are going to occur,
mm-hmm.
be triggered before identification occurs, right. because identification is cognitive.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Because it doesn't matter that we differentiate between a brown bear and a black bear. What our brain needs to know is, it's a bear. We need to get out of here. And not even that it's a bear, it's a threat.
You know what? Maybe this is a good analogy too, is that your thing about lifting the tarp mm-hmm. or whatever it is, if you hear the leaves rustling underneath,
right.
you're going to you don't know what it is,
right.
but your brain is going to start mm-hmm. protecting you.
Right,
okay.
exactly.
Right.
So because of that, that's what makes anxiety disorder so challenging at times to work with, because there are times when you are responding to something and you don't know what it is. Your brain is reacting to right. a perceived stressor that you may not be fully cognizant of.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really, you know, except for some prices maybe, there is nothing in Publix that should elicit an anxiety response, a fear response.
Right.
But there are people who are walking down the aisles of Publix or a grocery store and will have a panic attack.
So in a very real sense, you're saying that the emotional structures of the brain are doing what they're designed to do,
mm-hmm.
but they're doing them either too quickly
mm-hmm.
or when it's not necessary.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So how does this relate to emotional meltdowns? There are times when the emotional meltdown is part of the fight or flight reaction to
right.
a stressful mm-hmm. stimulus. So if a person is experiencing something that their brain interprets as a threat
right.
for whatever
right.
reason,
mm-hmm.
Usually maladaptively, it's not supposed to, you know, if a teenager asks to go to the movies and the parent says no, that should not trigger an anxiety response or a fight or flight type of response, but sometimes in some people
it does. Okay.
And then they will have an emotional meltdown
mm-hmm.
a la a fight or flight response, usually a fight response.
Mm-hmm.
Not fight like this, but fight emotionally.
It's an aggressive,
angry, agitated, irritable, just
what you elicit is defensive aggression.
Right.
Okay, that's what you're seeing. Because a fight or flight response is defensive aggression.
Right.
You're either trying to escape mm-hmm. or you want to vanquish,
mm-hmm.
Deal with the threat,
right.
end the threat somehow, either destroy it
mm-hmm.
in some way or get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is a form of, so anxiety produces a form of defensive aggression.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So what we know about kids or even adults with anxiety disorders is that their brain tends to be a little bit more sensitive.
A little more sensitive.
To, mm-hmm. to stimulus.
Does stimuli. What it's supposed to do.
Right.
But does it a little sooner uh-huh. than in others.
Right. It, okay. It's a little bit, it's almost, I think of it as sort of a, as the sunburn, right? It's, you're so sensitive that even a shirt that you would typically wear every day is just,
right.
kind of keeps you on edge and is mm-hmm. uncomfortable and,
right.
and even hurts a little bit. And that's what anxiety does to our brain. It makes it a little bit more sensitive, a little bit more likely to sense even the slightest movement, even sense even the slightest mm-hmm. hint of a threat.
your brain is on full alert for it and will respond. Mm-hmm. And so when we have emotional meltdowns from this, again, it is very much so a subcortical. And when I say subcortical, I'm talking about it's not a cognitive process. It's mm-hmm. not a, I'm going to have a meltdown so that I get what I want.
Right.
It's a, I'm having a meltdown, but I have no idea why.
That's right.
And all I know is all of this stuff has to come out. And they won't even be able to articulate that until afterwards.
And I think that is a key point here, because in the first day we talked about parenting, those kind of temper tantrums have a function.
Right.
They're designed, even though I've lost control of mm-hmm. myself, it started out with, I want something, I just don't know how to get it.
Right.
Okay. And so we say that has an instrumental, mm-hmm. it mm-hmm. becomes instrumental in the sense that the tantrum becomes an instrument.
Right. Okay?
In the case of anxiety, that's not what's happening. Right. What's happening is the brain is responding in a normal way, but it's responding too soon. Mm-hmm. Or when it's unnecessary to respond. If you're asked to do something, it shouldn't produce that response.
Right.
But it did.
Right.
Okay. So it's a normal response, just out of context.
Right.
Okay.
And these, unlike the ADHD meltdowns that tend to be that spark, that flash.
Right.
Meltdowns associated with anxiety disorders tend to be more prolonged.
They're
much more enduring because the brain is having to make sense of things.
That's
it's
right.
having to recover in a
if you think
in a more
of,
detailed way.
Right. If you think of the meltdown that's associated with anxiety has a fairly typical pattern of ascending, and then you have the explosion, and then there has to be recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this temporal pattern to a meltdown mm-hmm. related to anxiety that doesn't exist with ADHD. With ADHD, we said it's a blip.
Right.
Okay. With this, it's more prolonged, and there's a beginning, an escalation, and a recovery.
Yeah. And so the way that we have to manage meltdowns associated with anxiety mm-hmm. disorders, we're going to have some similar issues here, and that is we're going to look for triggers. We're going to look for the best we can to identify the things that set off mm-hmm. or elicit the meltdown. Again, that is not always an easy thing to do because one of the big challenges associated with a panic attack or a panic disorder is your brain is reacting to things, and sometimes we have no idea what it's reacting to.
That's right.
It could be a sound, it could be a smell, it could be a person, it could be mm-hmm. all kinds of different things.
That's right.
And we just aren't always able to identify what it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, in some situations, we can figure out what it is. For example, in kids, many times we can, if a kid all day long is expecting that, hey, at 3 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to go to the arcade.
Right.
And at 3 o'clock, when 3 o'clock arrives, the parent says, oh, no, we're not going to go to do that. Mm-hmm. We're going to stay here and mow the yard. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep picking on mowing the yard all week. We're going to stay here and mow the yard. A kid with an anxiety disorder needs and is really looking for predictability. They really want to make sure that their life, that's where OCD and those kinds of things come from, really work hard to keep control in all of their life. And so that type of unexpected shift or change in expectation can be the trigger sets them off.
I'm glad you've mentioned OCD, obsessive mm-hmm. compulsive disorder, because people who are highly anxious use routines mm-hmm. to manage their anxiety. They know that they need to get some control here because they lose control quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they use repetition, they use rituals, they use routines to manage their anxiety. And so the problem may not be but you have to allow them to do that. I mean, that is becoming a self-regulating strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
They're learning how to compensate for the anxiety.
Right.
So you have to allow that to occur.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so when we don't, and so we see this a lot of times in people who have difficulty transitioning, that shift in activity, that shift mm-hmm. in expectation is really difficult to emotionally control.
That's right.
And so we have an anxiety response that can elicit an emotional meltdown.
If you've ever cooked a meal with other people, like Thanksgiving dinner is always mm-hmm. one of those things, even adults mm-hmm. who like to have routine. Some adults, I mean, if you came to me and said, we're going to make Italian food tonight, but then you brought Indian ingredients for something else, so fine, we'll make whatever you want to make. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. But for some people, it's very important
right.
to do things at a certain time, mm-hmm. to do things as we agreed to do them.
Right.
Highly anxious people like predictability,
right.
and they like for things to happen exactly as you said they were going to happen,
right.
and they don't deal well with transitions,
exactly.
and they don't deal well with unpredictability and with change.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you have to allow
mm-hmm.
That they need to have these. If you're going to be around these people, mm-hmm. if you're going to have them as friends, then you have to allow them to have that.
Right. And so in the situation like I was describing, so at 3 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to go to the arcade,
right.
and then as soon as there is the sign that you may not do that,
oh.
you need to start having the conversation then. Say, you know what? It looks like it's going to be raining this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I know we were thinking about going to the arcade, but I really need to stay and try to get the yard mowed. So let's figure out how we're going to handle this and have the conversation. I know what many of you are thinking. No, this isn't catering to your child. No, this isn't giving in to them. No, this isn't them allowing mm-hmm. them to be in control.
Right.
What this is understanding your child, understanding who he or she is, and working with him to and her to, or her to help them learn to regulate mm-hmm. and adjust to changes in their expectations
so
and routine.
You're not catering, you're teaching.
Right.
Okay, please start thinking about that today. Whether you're talking about a spouse, mm-hmm. a sibling, or your own children, you are not catering to them, and mm-hmm. you're not going to make it worse. You are teaching them how to manage better.
Right.
Okay? And so replace catering with teaching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're helping them cope with it. Because what's mm-hmm. going to happen is you hit them with it at the last minute, and then they have a meltdown, and then you're going to zap them for having a meltdown. It's like... Mm-hmm. We're now zapping them for two reasons, and
that's right.
that's not fair, mm-hmm. especially if it's predictable. I think the thing that frustrates me the most when I'm working with especially parents mm-hmm. is when they do something that they know is going to set off an unacceptable behavior from their child,
mm-hmm.
but then they do it anyways without giving the child any right. opportunity to prevent mm-hmm. it or any, you know, without doing anything to help mm-hmm. cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
All this is helping them cope with change.
Right.
This is just helping them cope with something that we know they have a difficulty right. with.
And it's you have one set of responsibilities if your child has increased anxiety. I don't like to say anxiety disorder.
Right.
But if they're highly anxious, then that's a responsibility. You may have a spouse
mm-hmm.
or a partner who has increased anxiety. Then the decision is, because what you don't want to do is you don't need to cater to it.
Right.
Because that if you allow your partner to have these rituals and they do get ingrained,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have to live that life.
Right.
Okay. So you may want to work with your partner,
yeah.
work together.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we go back to that win-win.
Right.
It has to be a collaborative effort.
Right.
So you don't want everybody in the world to give in to it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to work with somebody.
Right.
No amount of insisting, no amount mm-hmm. of punishing, no amount of cajoling is going to change the anxiety disorder.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I remember an example that I've used for this before has been my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
When she was little, she had a very difficult time, and exactly this what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly anxiety related. But we could be going somewhere that is one of her favorite places to go. Like
mm-hmm.
we could be going to her grandmother's, her Nana's
right.
house, and we are at home, and we say, "All right, let's go get in the car. We're going to go mm-hmm. to Nana's house." The meltdown would begin there.
Mm-hmm.
And would continue for the 30-minute ride in the car,
mm-hmm.
You know, unconsolable. inconsolable. We could not calm her down. We would get there, and and one of us would have to stay in the car with her for a few more minutes before we finally got her inside. Yeah. Once we got inside, everything was fine. Now, how did we fix that? Hey, in about 10 minutes, we're going to leave and go to Nana's house, so let's start getting ready. That little change, just giving her, we used a timer to begin with. We said, I'm setting the timer for 10 minutes, and in 10 minutes, we're going to leave and we're going to go to Nana's house. That little bit of a heads up eliminated them completely. Right. Mm-hmm. First try, completely eliminated them. All she needed was the heads up. That's all she needed.
The problem was transitioning. It was too quick of a transition for her. Okay, mm-hmm. But that's getting to know your own child.
Right.
What is the trigger?
Right.
Can I deal with that?
Right. So look for that. If your child is the anxious child, and your child has some of these kinds of difficulties that lead to meltdowns, just find those little things that you can do to help ease that transition, ease that, and allows for some comfort with either transitions or whatever it is that may be causing the anxiety. Right. And then just prevent that.
Now, we talked about a neurobiological component. There appears to be a neurobiological component. And that is what the biological component are those subcortical brain structures that rest in the clump of them in the middle of your brain. And there are medications. In this case, there are some medications we can use, not for the meltdowns,
for the anxiety.
But for the anxiety. So if we can reduce the anxiety a little bit, we reduce the chance of having a meltdown.
Right.
But we're not medicating the meltdown.
Right.
We're medicating the anxiety.
Right. Okay. And those medications come with their own set of concerns and side effects that we have to be cautious of. And we won't go into all of that here, maybe on another podcast sometime. But yes, we can treat the anxiety with some medication. But here again, it's the anxiety that's at the root. That's what we have to manage. Tomorrow, in tomorrow's podcast, it's a very different story.
Right. Different indeed.
Yes. So we'll deal with that then, though.
Okay.
All right? Until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.